one piece of advice is don't be discouraged. But I think a more important thing is find a question that you're really, really passionate about, something that really pisses you off, like something that doesn't work, and you ask yourself, why doesn't it work? And you're really curious about it, and follow that and try to answer that question. And if you're passionate about what you're doing and what you're learning, I think you'll be successful.
Hello and welcome back to Carry the Wind Radio's Women in Science series, where we profile some impressive female scientists. My name is Deanna Nicola. To close out the series, Hassan Al-Khair and I talked to Dr. Marina Sirota, an assistant professor of computational health science at UCSF. Before starting her position at UCSF, she worked as a senior research scientist at Pfizer, a biopharmaceutical company. Along with her academic duties, Dr. Sirota is actively involved in a day program that aims to expose high school girls to AI.
My name is Marina Sirota, and I'm an assistant professor here at UCSF, part of the Baker Computational Health Sciences Institute.
What research projects are you working on specifically?
We have many awesome and exciting research projects in the lab. So the overall goal is to, I'll start back a little bit. So my background is in bioinformatics and data integration. And the overall goal is to figure out how do we leverage different types of data, either molecular data or getting into clinical data analysis as well, in the context of disease therapeutics and diagnostics, which is super broad. And my personal interests lie within studying the role of the immune system in disease. So we have projects relating to autoimmune disease. So for instance, we have some projects where we're looking at rheumatoid arthritis, where we're gathering data from the public domain, mostly gene expression data, and seeing whether we can come up with new biomarkers for rheumatoid arthritis. We have projects relating to lupus, and this is a collaborative project where we work together with Lindsay Criswell's group. There's another faculty member who's involved, Christina Lanata, who curated a cohort of lupus patients, about 300 patients from diverse ethnic backgrounds, and have collected different types of measurements on them. So then, again, the idea is how do we pull all of this data together to study disease heterogeneity? We have a lot of work looking at the role of the immune system in pregnancy and pregnancy outcomes. So we're looking at the interaction between the maternal and the fetal immune systems. And then for many of these projects, we're also interested in the therapeutic aspect of things. So how can we use this information to inform drug discovery? In terms of the different questions that the lab is addressing, a lot of that is also stems from personal interest. My dad has multiple sclerosis, which is an autoimmune disease, and that's sort of how I got interested in the autoimmune disease field, and that brought me to study the role of autoimmunity and the immune system in disease.
What are some of the challenges you've found in having such huge amounts of data and having to sift through that data and figure out what's most relevant, what's most important?
Yeah, that's a great question too. So in terms of challenges, I guess one big challenge with using data from the public domain is that the annotation might not be perfect. So there's a wealth of data out there, but it might not be curated or annotated to the same level as, let's say, a close collaborator at UCSF might have access to, where we know who these patients are. And what we usually do is we try to aggregate as much data as we can with the idea that if we aggregate data across different studies, then maybe some of the noise might get filtered out and the signal that persists across all of these studies might actually be real. So I think of computational work as a way to generate hypotheses, as a way to leverage the knowledge and the data that we as a scientific community have created and figure out what is missing or what might be the hypotheses to move forward and what data do we need to generate to validate them. Yeah. So the challenge is, one of the challenges is annotation of data when it comes from the public domain. But more generally, the biggest challenge or the biggest question that we often ask when we work with data, what is signal and what is noise?
Yeah.
And That's a big one, and that's what we work to solve.
So I actually also come from a bioinformatic background.
Oh, nice.
And one thing that I've always like really loved about is this opportunity to like jump around from system to system and really working with a bunch of different people. It's a fun learning experience. However, for me personally, it has gotten annoying at times. And I wonder, like, is there ever a moment for you where you're like, I wish I could just focus on one system and not jump from like these like five really distant projects, for example?
Well, that's the benefit of kind of running your own lab is that you can focus, you can make that choice. And I've had a hard time making that choice to focus on a single thing. We definitely have themes within our lab projects, but we work on a variety of different things. And I actually think that that's a benefit because that way we can learn, take, you know, what have I learned from autoimmune disease and how can I apply it to pregnancy?
Yeah.
And it also makes us transfer some of the methodologies and approaches that we develop for one disease or one model and apply it to a different one. So I think I look at this as a benefit. I actually find it really fun to be able to work on very different things and I keep learning as a result of that. For instance, one of the areas that is newer to my lab and some work that we've been working on for the past several years is studying Alzheimer's disease. And I did not come from an Alzheimer's disease background at all, but I had a graduate student who reached out to me, Ali Taubes, who was in an Alzheimer's disease lab at the time. And she was interested in learning more about bioinformatics and computational biology. So we ended up forming a project, a drug repurposing project, leveraging in the Alzheimer's disease space, where we wanted to focus specifically on the APOE44 subgroup of Alzheimer's disease patients and see if we can predict a new drug for that subgroup. So we ended up doing that and identified a drug that she then validated in an animal study in collaboration with her other co-PI, Yadong Kuang, at the Gladstone Institute. And it was a great experience, and it led us to actually apply for joint funding together with Yadong, and we got an R1 grant funded stemming off of this work, and it's an area that I have never touched before.
That's
and
awesome.
Now we're doing a lot of work in that space.
Awesome.
We've since then also applied for a second grant and got that funded to study sex differences in Alzheimer's disease.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a big question because it's much more common in women and people don't really know why. So we're looking into the molecular pathways that might be different in women with disease as opposed to men. And actually, that circles back to the immune system because a lot of the pathways that we observe that are misregulated in women with Alzheimer's disease are autoimmune and inflammatory, and we don't necessarily see that in men. So kind of coming full circle to my general interest in studying the role of the immune system in disease, kind of this project sort of brought us back to that.
Mm-hmm.
That's really
awesome. Yeah. So apart from, you know, this great diversity of projects that you can work on as part of your computational kind of bent, what would you say is the favorite part of your job?
Great question. A few things I enjoy very much. I love mentoring students and kind of bringing folks who haven't done computation to this field and enabling them to do these analyses and take advantage of the resources that are available. And then the other part is, you know, being on this brink of discovery and being on the edge of what's actually known. It's a very exciting feeling. And although I don't do as much data analysis myself anymore, I feel that through working closely with my students and postdocs. And that's a lot of fun.
What would you say is your least favorite?
Oh. Well, I guess there's some administrative things like keeping budgets and, you know, things that are part of running a lab that I would say are less exciting than the scientific aspects.
Yeah.
But, you know, that it has to be done to keep things going.
Yeah.
So
cool.
That's okay.
So maybe we should get into, like, what brought you into research and science. Why did you pick science as a career?
That's a great question. I was always interested in math and computation stemming from that. I was pretty good in math in school, and I thought I was going to go the computational route, but more on the software engineering side. until I, as a high school student, I think I was in 11th grade, I took a biotech class, which was a lot of fun. I went to high school in San Francisco, actually. And it was a lot of fun. We got to do cool experiments like PCR and gene transfection and made bacteria glow in the dark. It was super exciting. Although I realized I'm not very good in the lab, like just not as detail-oriented when it comes to lab procedures, and just had a hard time getting experiments to work. Mm-hmm. So I asked my teacher, how do I take my, well, something that I'm actually good at, the math and kind of with the idea that I want to go into analytics, and combine that with biology and genetics specifically. And he said, oh, there's this field, bioinformatics. You'll get to college, you'll figure it out. So that's what I did. I did my undergraduate at Stanford, and I started taking both biology and computer science courses side by side, and got really excited about it, and got involved in research as an undergraduate. I was in a comparative genomics lab, Serafin Batoglu's lab, and we were working on projects relating to figuring out how to leverage multiple sequence alignment data, so comparing the human genome to the genomes of other species to specifically look at regions of the genome that might be conserved and therefore might be functional. And it was great. I learned a lot. I got a feeling for what is it like to be in an academic research environment setting, and I found it really fun and exciting to be part of that. I did this joint undergraduate master's program, and then I started exploring opportunities. I applied to graduate school, but also wanted to explore industry opportunities at the time, and realized that the majority of the industry opportunities that I was getting offers for were software engineering positions, and nothing at that time on the, well, data science, I guess, as a term, did not exist back then. So I felt like I really wanted to stay at this intersection of biology and computer science, and maybe I needed more training to do that. So I ended up pursuing a PhD. I joined Atul Butte's lab very early on. I was one of his first students. Actually, I heard his job talk when I myself was interviewing for grad school, and I got super excited. I got excited about using data that already exists, and I didn't realize how much data existed in the public domain at the time, but also got excited about the translational aspects of the work and actually working on disease. And after graduate school, I actually spent a few years working at Pfizer, where I got a chance to see where genomics and bioinformatics plugs into the drug discovery process, from early target identification to antibody screening to animal studies to clinical trials, so kind of all across the board. And then had a chance to come back to academia, first briefly to Stanford, and then UCSF when Atul started the Institute for Computational Health Sciences.
What was
here.
That transition like, flip-flopping between academia and industry, since they're very different in many ways?
Also, was that your intention as well, like on top of that?
Okay, I'll talk about the intention first.
Yeah.
It's hard to talk about intention because I thought that I was actually going to pursue an industry career all throughout my training. But when I got to industry, I realized that it actually wasn't as different. Maybe the role that I had or the opportunity that I had, because it was sort of an exploratory group, so we got to collaborate with academia a lot and work on different projects. Of course, some of the work that we were doing, you know, in terms of improving antibody screening or something like that, was more pipeline development, but a lot of it was still research, and I got a chance to work with some groups here at UCSF and actually all over the world when I was at Pfizer. But if you think about industry and academia, there are many parallels. In both cases, you need to convince a bunch of people that your ideas are good, whether it's NIH or VC venture capitalists when you're fundraising, or if it's your boss if you're in a big company and you're looking for resources. You need to recruit and find people to join your team. Again, whether it's your coworkers as collaborators, whether you have a startup and you're recruiting a new team, or if you're a PI and you're trying to get graduate students or postdocs. So that's the other kind of aspect of things. And then you need to do the work. You actually need to show that, you know, productivity, whether it's publishing papers and kind of disseminating your science that way, or building towards a product. So I think in that sense, it's actually, there are many, many parallels, and I didn't find it to be too different. The speed is, one difference is that in academia, we sort of get a chance to think as a graduate student. Let's say you get to work and think of, on a problem for several years, and you have deadlines, but it's, you really have a lot of time to dig deep. From my experience in the industry, for some projects, I had that leeway for research-related projects, but there were many, many more projects. Over 3 years, I think I worked on 23 projects. Oh, wow. So there's a lot. There, in terms of that, sometimes you have to get to the results quicker and maybe don't have as much time to explore all the different methods to analyze the data, but kind of get to some sort of an answer, because other groups depend on your answer and need to move forward.
Could that also be somewhat helpful, you know, because in, if you're doing your PhD thesis and you're working on a single question for so many years, you can easily get lost in the weeds, or, you know, it's very easy to kind of take your time. But if you're forced to meet a deadline and come up with answers in industry, in some sense, even though you're not able to dig as deep, you're getting things done, and maybe in some sense that might be rewarding.
Absolutely, and I think we can learn from each other. So some of the techniques that are applied in industry, I think it might be helpful. It's a balance, right? You don't want to hinder creativity, but you want to have enough space to explore, but at the same time, you don't want to be stuck in a vicious circle where you're trying to solve a problem, but maybe the data that you have can't answer that question. And sometimes you just need to say, this is it. I've tried. This is what it looks like. These are the results that we can get. Let's build future experiments off of that. And I think that skill is very, very helpful. So having experience in both really helps in that sense.
So it sounds like your career trajectory was pretty smooth, right? Was there any moments that you think were particularly challenging?
Well, I think
graduate school and biotech.
Yeah, I think they're challenging moments all the time. We all have situations where, you know, projects sometimes don't work out in the way that we expect. Maybe we get negative results. But I think these are all experiences that we learn from. And sometimes it's important to report on those negative findings. For instance, we had a study looking at genetics in preterm birth. And we know that preterm birth is a condition that recurs in women. We know that women who are born preterm are more likely to have a baby that's born early. But when we looked at the genetics, at least from our perspective, we didn't find many hits. Mm-hmm. And that's okay. We explored the data. We asked what we could with the data that we had. And then we reported on the negative findings. Yeah. There were technical challenges with that study, but it is what it is. We were hoping to find, but not every question can be answered with the data that we have, and that's okay. Mm-hmm. So those types of ups and downs happen all the time. I guess more generally, starting out a lab is challenging because recruiting people is hard and getting initial funding is hard. So, but those are challenges that probably every PI goes through. So absolutely.
Even pushing things a little further, was there ever a moment where you felt like you wanted to leave science?
Oh. Not yet.
Okay.
Not yet.
That's good. That's good.
Yeah. Hasn't happened. No, I haven't felt that way. And I think one of the reasons, well, several reasons. One is I feel very fortunate to be surrounded by such talented people in my lab and also colleagues here at UCSF, and very supported both by my mentor at Tool Butte, but also other faculty that I've collaborated on grants. And yeah, I mean, I know not every grant gets funded. And the first number that I submitted, I didn't get funded. And that's okay. We know that. So I think because I have all of these both mentors around me who've helped guide me through the process of starting my own lab and getting going, but also the students and postdocs in my group who believe in our science and have worked super hard. I have not felt like that, and I'm very happy that I haven't.
That's great.
Yeah, so It's been great so far.
That's awesome. Just to change the topic of the conversation a little bit. So as you likely know, this discussion is due to Women's History Month. So we also wanted to kind of learn about your experience as a woman in science and kind of what challenges you faced along the way, if any.
That's a great question. I think this stems from the fact that I have had such great mentors along the way, both my undergraduate mentor Seraphim Batsoglu and Atul have been incredibly supportive throughout my career, and I never felt like the fact that I was a woman in science was any different from being a scientist myself. So I feel very fortunate that that's the case. I feel that, again, I've been lucky to both have the support of my mentors as well as others. And I really haven't felt the difference.
That's good.
I do, though, feel very passionately about introducing science and STEM to young girls. Mm-hmm. So one of the initiatives that I launched last year is a program called AI for All. I started out at Stanford a number of years ago, and I was involved at least a little bit at Stanford from the very beginning. But the idea is to bring artificial intelligence to the general community and to everybody, regardless of their background. And for us at UCSF, the focus is specifically applications of artificial intelligence to biomedicine. And the other aspect that I felt very passionate about is that the research projects that the participants are involved with are really at the edge, at the cutting edge. So they're not really canned research projects that are the same from year to year, but they actually get to be immersed in a lab experience and get a chance to work on real projects.
Can you tell us a little more about those like students that you work with?
So last year was the first program. So I've had high school interns in my lab since I started, and it's been amazing. Some of these kids are incredible, and they're able to ask questions and do analyses. A lot of the kids know how to program. It's spectacular. I've been blown away. They've given talks at conferences. It's fantastic. And the first few I was able to mentor myself. Of course, now I don't quite have the bandwidth, but again, we have students and postdocs in the group who've taken on that role in terms of individual student mentorship. But the program itself, the goal was to targeting young girls, so girls in high school. It's a program that is not a residential program. It's a day program at UCSF. And they come here. They have some introduction to statistics and machine learning. They get some introduction to Python. It's a mixed group, so some of them do know how to program, and some of them did not know how to program. They had guest speakers, and a lot of the computational researchers awesome. At UCSF gave talks.
I wish I had that.
Yeah, I know. I was actually sitting in on the talks, and I loved it. They had some personal growth sessions on how to write an abstract, how to do a pitch, how to talk about yourself, and how to write a personal statement. So a bunch of those kind of personal growth sessions. And they worked on research projects. They visited the Chan Zuckerberg BioHub and got a chance to learn a little bit about both the wet lab and the sequencing work, but also about the computational work that's going on there. And at the end, they had a symposium where the students presented their work. And it was extremely rewarding because, I mean, there were girls, they were in groups, but some of them have never programmed before, and they were talking about applying random forest and neural networks to different types of data and ran a lot of this analysis. Some worked in the drug discovery field, some worked with electronic medical record data, and some worked on some imaging analysis for Alzheimer's disease. So it was a very rewarding experience. So I want to I recognize that my experience, my own experience in science might be different from many others. So I want to share that with the younger generation and mm-hmm. encourage them to pursue their interests despite the hurdles that they might face.
So this might come across maybe as a weird question.
No problem.
But we are also interested to hear if you thought there were actually any advantages to being a woman in science. Because, you know, oftentimes it's very much talked about what the challenges are, but I feel like each person has personal experiences in which they've found maybe some benefit to being a woman in science. I don't know if you've felt...
That's a very interesting question. Yeah, and I think of myself as a scientist, but I guess one thing, and it's both a challenge and a benefit, I guess, but I don't know if it's only in science. I think it's just in life. I don't know. So I have a daughter. She is 20 months, and I will be honest, the one challenge for me has been balancing having a baby and running a lab. Mm-hmm. And it's crazy. It was very hard for me to go on maternity leave, and I actually tried to stay as connected as I could with my group, because there isn't anybody who can take, you can't just run, you know, go away from a lab for 3 months mm-hmm. or 4 months. And plus, I'm interested in the projects and the progress that folks are making and kind of want to push projects through. But at the same time, I wanted to spend some time with my daughter. So, and that has been kind of a challenge. And I don't know, though I feel like it's very similar for my husband, who's a dad, you know, not a woman in science, a dad in the industry. So I don't know how much of this is specific to being a woman or just experience of being a parent and running a lab. You, of course, have to ask my students. I hope I'm doing an okay job. But this is definitely a challenge. But one thing that where this whole experience of, you know, having to balance a family life and an academic career is it made me prioritize and kind of figure out what is most important in my work. And I'm still struggling with this. It's very hard for me to say no. I get excited about collaborations and projects. But this experience sort of made me realize that I have to prioritize, and otherwise we will not be successful as a group. So that's what I've been trying to do. And again, I don't know if that directly answers your question, but that's a way to turn a challenge into something positive. So
I like that.
Yeah, that has been my learning experience over the past 20 months or so.
Well, thank you so much for speaking.
Sure,
with us
of
today.
Course.
We've learned a lot. It was really great to get to know you.
This was a lot of fun.
This episode was produced by me, Hassan Okaro, along with Deanna Nekula, with the help from the team at Carry the One Radio. A big thank you to Sam Ahmed, Carly Van Orsdell, David Cabral, Judith Horn, Janine Cuevas, and all the rest of our wonderful Patreon supporters. You too can join the club by heading to patreon.com/carrytheone. If you give $3 or more, we'll send you some great thank you gifts, like our special 10th anniversary stickers. If $3 sounds a bit steep, but you want to support what we do, we appreciate any contribution. Or let us know what you think by leaving a comment or review. You can find more episodes on Spotify, iTunes, or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening to Carry the One's Women in Science series. And as always, stay curious.